It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
Time for another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Tom Caron, Jerry Remy with you. We complained for months about doing this without any games. Now, Jerry, they're 3-8, and maybe we should complain about doing them with games. Not exactly the start anybody wanted.
No, this is not exactly what we had in mind, TC. And, you know, it's strange to watch a club where you got pitching not pitching well, you got hitting not hitting well, and defense has not been good. When you got that combination of three things, you're not going to have a very good ball club. And that's exactly where the Red Sox are right now. It's so frustrating to watch because they just can't get the seem to get any one of those things to click for them. And even on a night where Evaldi pitches, you know, like last night, they still can't win that ball game. And it's becoming very frustrating. And I can imagine how frustrating it is for them because they know how short the season is and they know they're falling behind very quickly and how difficult it's going to be to come back. And especially the way the roster's made up. I mean, you know, they all know that. I mean, they all know that they don't have the type of pitching right now that's going to carry them to the postseason. So it's a problem. It's a big problem right now.
Last week, we heard Xander Bogaerts kind of call out the pitching a little bit postgame, saying, you know, when you can't score 7, 8, 9, 10 runs every night. You've been on teams where a guy steps up and calls other guys out. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's leadership. Sometimes it's complaining. Where did this fall in as far as you're concerned?
I lack of talent, I think, you know, more than anything else. So, you know, it is frustrating because, you know, as an offense, you're always battling back, it seems like, you know. But it's because, you know, let's be honest, I mean, they don't have a major league quality five-man rotation right now. And once you get past Evaldi and maybe Perez, there's very little right there that you can rely on. So I can understand his feelings. I get that, you know, and I've been on teams like that. I've been on teams that have, you know, performed poorly. And you got to be careful what you say because sometimes the talent's not there to back it up. And it's not that guys aren't trying. It's the fact that it becomes very frustrating for everybody. And I get the offensive thing. I mean, I played on an opposite team where we had great pitching with the Angels and we had no hitting at all. And if we got two runs a game, we'd say good luck to the pitcher, you know, go get him from there because we're probably not going to get any more. So you can imagine how frustrating that was for the pitching staff, you know, to have an offense like that behind them. So when you get something wrong like that, when you get off balance, stuff like that, it's very difficult to overcome.
You know, I said at one point in one of the early games, I said, I'll be fine if they blow a save late in the game because it means they had a lead late in the game, right? I lied. Sunday night, they blew that game in New York, and I was screaming at the TV like I haven't in a long time. That was a frustrating one, I think, for me because I had the lead four different times. Bogaerts, a couple of home runs. Devers had a good night. You had your A-list relievers out there, and Barnes couldn't hold the lead. You throw to Judge. I mean, it all goes back to me. He walked Tauchman, who's the number nine hitter, a pinch hitter. I know he's more than a number nine hitter. But two outs, you can't walk that guy and flip it over to LeMahieu and Judge. You were going to do damage. That, to me, was the most frustrating loss yet.
I would agree with you because, you know, it looked like they were clicking on all cylinders that particular night against the Yankees. And they were going to take one out of three in the series anyway and then head down to Tampa Bay, hopefully with a little bit of momentum and, you know, going in the right direction, but that just kind of flattens you right out when you lose a game like that. And especially when you get to the guys that you're really relying on who have done it in the past for you. You know, Barnes, Workman, those guys have got track records which have been very good for the Red Sox, and all of a sudden, boom, the home run, and you got a sweep. And you feel totally different, you know, going down for an off day in Tampa and then, you know, looking forward to the game on Tuesday. And you get something like that happens to you. It's deflating, you know, and it doesn't leave you. And then they go out last night and then, you know, they play somewhat of a decent game, but they had a lot of things that went against them last night that didn't help them. You know, the JD Martinez ball that went out should have been stayed in the ballpark. It would have been a run. You know, the thing hitting off the catwalk in that circus of a place down there. You know, it's all kind of stuff like that going on. Baldy striking a guy out. It should have been out. That wasn't called the strike. So, you know, all kind of things go bad on bad teams, and that's what exactly is happening right now to the Red Sox.
All right, I was going to get to this later, but you jumped up. We're going to go right there now. I came on the air post-game show when you guys were walking out of studio. You guys tiptoe out of studio. I appreciate that. Thank you. You're very quiet as you leave the studio so we can do our post-game show. But I came on last night and said, the Trop's a dump, okay? And yeah. I'm not saying any news. We've known this all along. But it's kind of ridiculous when you stop and think about it that it's 2020 and Major League Baseball games are still being played in a place with junk hanging from the ceiling. No. I never even really thought about that cutout where the J.D. Martinez double left. Why is that even cut out? They told me the fans have tables. The whole place is empty. Put fans somewhere else. That should have hit off a wall and been an RBI triple. No, it's just a joke of a ballpark.
It really is. And, you know, I've been saying that for years, and I've got a lot of bad, you know, responses from that, saying, oh, you're always on the Trop. But, you know, the Trop's not a major league ballpark. It's just not. It's a converted whatever it was. And it's not a major league ballpark. I mean, they desperately need to make a move, you know, to go to a new ballpark in that area, which I still don't think they'll draw down there. And you know, I mentioned the other night on the air, Nashville, you know, as a place that could be coming up, you know, in time, what might be an ideal spot for them because, you know, I think they draw very well there and the town would be excited. They do very well in hockey. They do very well in football. You know, so, I mean, I think it'd be a good spot for a baseball team and, you know, get out of that place. That place is just horrible. When you walk into that place for the first time and you look up at that ceiling and you see four rings, you know, that and speakers and all kind of junk hanging down that a ball can carry them off. I mean, it makes a travesty of the game, I think. I really believe that, you know, and I never liked it. I don't like it now. And I wish they'd get the hell out of there.
That's why I said that last night. The only upside for this new way we're all doing games is you don't have to go to the Trop, at least. At least you don't have to go and see all that crap.
You know, actually.
How hard was that? I was watching in the postgame show, we aired the clip of the ball that hit the Renfro ball. Was it Renfro? Yeah, it was Renfro that hit the ring that Devers couldn't catch. And you were the first to say it must have hit something. Was that the hardest play you guys have had yet? Because, again, you can only see what the monitors are showing you. You can't see the O-rings up in the room.
Well, yeah, in some ways. But I knew it had to hit a ring because I was watching where Devers was setting up to catch that ball. And then all of a sudden, this ricocheted to his left by about 15 feet. So it was obvious to me that it hit either a speaker or a ring. And I figured it was probably the ring that it hit. And, you know, those are the kind of things that happen down there all the time. And players get confused because a lot of the players don't really know the rules. I mean, that ball's in play if it lands in fair territory, right? I mean, right. It's crazy.
And it almost did. It almost did. It was this far away.
It almost did. And that's why you saw Devers throw the ball at first base. Because he didn't know. He really didn't know the rules, you know, and he didn't know if there was fair or foul ball. And then you know, you see crazy stuff all the time in that ballpark. And every series, something weird happens, and it just drives you crazy. Now, if the Red Sox would have won the game last night, I'd have said the same thing, you know, because I say it every time I go down there, and I get in a lot of trouble for it, but I don't care. It's not a Major League Baseball quality place. It's that plain and simple.
Well, and you know, I said on the postgame show last night, they didn't lose because of that, okay? I mean, you still got to bear down. They lost because Renfro hit a double. They lost because of the triple that came the next inning. They lost because they scored the runs, but it didn't help. It was a joke of a moment. And it certainly led to that inning becoming a two-run inning for the Rays.
It did. It really did. And there were a couple of things that happened in that inning. The strike three that I thought that should have been called and then that.
Right.
And then, you know, then after that, it's all downhill. But the confusion on players, you know, when they look up and they see a ball hit something like that, everybody's confused. Nobody knows really what the, you know, the ground rule is. I mean, I know you're supposed to go over it with them before the game. But in the heat of the battle, it's like, what fly ball ever goes up and hits something like that and comes down and lands 15 feet from you? You know, you panic. You don't know what to do. And I'm tired of the place. I'm tired of watching it. They don't draw, you know, even when people are allowed in the stands, they don't draw. I don't know what the fascination is with staying there. I don't know why they stay there, why they can't get a new stadium built. But I wouldn't want it built in Florida because I don't think where they go in Florida they're going to draw.
Right, right.
I really don't.
And Nashville's interesting. Nashville's interesting. Dave Dombrowski is in charge of the group there trying to get the team. Montreal's interesting. They would like to try it again anywhere. Montreal would be great. I've been saying this for a couple of years now. Montreal would be great if it was in the American League East. You know, the problem is they were a National League team. There were no rivalries.
Right.
If they were an AL East team, you'd have 18, 19 games a year against the Red Sox. So all your Vermonter and New Hampshire, Northern New Englanders would go up to games.
Sure.
You have 19 games against New York. You got the whole upstate New York that a Yankees fans would go up to the games. 19 games against Toronto, which would be the biggest thing in Canada for those 19 games with Montreal. Montreal should have a baseball team. And I know they've had that cockamamie play half their games in Montreal, half their games at the top. I don't know if that works. Get a team in Montreal. Get a team in Nashville. Get a team somewhere. Oklahoma City's wanted a team for a while. Get a team somewhere where fans are going to appreciate it, because they don't appreciate it down there, and it's a joke.
No, it is. And they've had some very good teams down there, too, and they just don't get the support. And then they get the phony fans that come out for the playoffs and, you know, ring their bells and do all that kind of stuff.
Oh, my God, those thunder sticks they used to have.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. So it's never been one of my favorite places. I mean, from a broadcast point of view, it's pretty good to broadcast down there.
Yeah, right.
It's really not bad. And I also enjoy the hotel down there very much. But that's about it. You know, when the game starts, it's kind of like all bets are off what's going to happen in this.
Well, I hope the guys enjoyed the hotel, because that's all they could do is stay in a hotel for about 40 hours on their off day. You know, it's getting to the point now where they lose. You can almost see Ron Renicki saying, go back to your rooms, because that's all they can do is they go back to their hotel rooms. Listen, we talked about the pitching, and we said coming into all of this season, the pitching wasn't going to be very good. We knew the starting pitching was going to be a question. But let's not give a free skate to the offense here. Looking up some numbers this morning, and we're going to dig into this on the pregame show tonight. The Red Sox have swung at more pitches outside the strike zone than any other team in Major League Baseball. The worst.
Yeah.
Jose Peraza, fourth worst in baseball, 48.5% outside pitches he has swung at. And Rafael Devers, who had gotten a lot better last year at being more disciplined, has ninth most swings outside the strike zone in all of Major League Baseball. Remember Alex Cora, though, hunt strikes, right? Don't chase outside the zone. Wait for them to deliver a pitch that you can do something with. Jerry, it's not happening. Last night we saw Devers hitting the back leg and he swung at it. I mean, I understand it's a good curveball, but if it's hitting you in the back leg, you ought to be able to hold up your swing. The game ends with back-to-back called third strikes with the bases loaded. And both of those at-bats get to that point because they swing at something outside early in the zone. Now you're in a pitcher's count. You got two strikes and they freeze you. The discipline is lacking, and I guess my question to you, Jerry, is it because they're trailing, so now you do more pressure on yourself, you try to make something happen, or is this collection of hitters just not the same discipline guys we're used to?
Well, I think they should be disciplined, and better than what they have been. I think one of the problems is, DC, and I've been in these situations as a player, when you're not going well, you have a tendency to chase. And, you know, when you're feeling comfortable at the plate, that's when you see the ball the best and you don't chase as much. And I always found that when I was struggling, I was chasing bad pitches. I was, you know, because I was so anxious. I wanted to do something good. And I was chasing pitches that were not hittable pitches for me. But when you were in a comfort zone and you were swinging the bat well, it seemed like you saw the ball better, you saw the location better, you were more relaxed, and you were picking out pitches, you know. That's why Corey used to say all the time, look, if that first pitch is a strike and it's a fastball, jump all over it. Why wait to get a couple of strikes on you? You know, and I like that approach. I've always liked that approach. But now they're swinging at first pitches that are way out of the strike zone. And I think a lot of that comes, you know, it's the same guys we watched last year. And you know, most of them anyway. And, you know, they weren't that bad last year at it. But it's just the fact that I think that they've been pressing since game one of the season. Well, actually, game one was fine. But since that point, they've been pressing. And that's, I think that's the reason they were over-anxious. They're not comfortable with the plate. It took Bogaerts a long time to get comfortable. Then, you know, he's finally looks like he's a little bit locked in now. But there's not many guys in that lineup that are locked in. And I think that's one of the reasons they're chasing a lot of bad balls.
Yeah, in fact, you talk about opening night. That was the only game this year that they've drawn three or more walks. I mean, they're just not taking walks. J.D. Martinez had a couple of doubles last night, moved him back to the three hole. Maybe that makes him a little more comfortable instead of the two spot. After the game on Tuesday night, he spoke about some of the challenges this team is facing right now.
I've said it before. You know, when I was in double A, we had video. You go back and look at your video in double A. So I think guys are accustomed to that. And guys kind of just I don't know, you kind of depend on it. So the new wave of hitting, said this before to you guys in spring training when, you know, we asked about it, is it's a new wave of hitting. Guys are more, you know, mechanical. They break down their swings. They look for certain movements. They look to see, you know, check certain spots where they get to at certain times when they're loading or when they're landing. But all that is, you know, it's not the thing anymore.
So, Jerry, we know that J.D. Martinez, maybe more than any hitter in baseball, relies on video. Video's every practice swing, every in-game swing. The in-game adjustments are not available to him. And of all people, we know that's going to be a problem for him. But he also talked about even the lack of communication, that these guys aren't seeing each other. They don't all come to the ballpark early to get the early work. Listen, every team is dealing with the same things. But this team, the way it is constructed, it seems to me that this is a group that works on hitting more than most teams. I mean, they constantly, even the good hitters, even J.D. Martinez, one of the best hitters in the game, is never happy with his swing, right? He's always trying to improve. And I think everything they're dealing with right now between the isolation and the video rules, all of that, I think it's hurting this team. It's not an excuse, but I do think it's having an effect on this team.
No, for example, yesterday, you know, a day after a day off, they would have been at the ballpark at 2 o'clock taking extra batting practice. You know, as we've seen many times, DC, we've traveled with teams for a long time, and we see, you know, the Red Sox all constantly are out there taking extra batting practice. Those things can't happen now, you know, and so it's a different world of living, but everybody's living in that world, and you got to adjust to it somehow. And I understand JD and his mechanics and how he likes to study it, but it's not available to him right now, so you got to be able to figure something else out. You know, and unfortunately, he hasn't been able to do that. You know, he looked a little better last night, you know, after the day off. He might have had a chance to talk to his father, you know, down in Florida, because I believe they're from the area, and they come up to a lot of games in St. Pete, and he's kind of like a hitting coach for him. Maybe that helps, something like that helps. But, you know, the getting the pure work in that you need, you can't do it. You just can't do it now, and it's frustrating, because when you're struggling as a hitter, the one thing you want to do is you want to go out and feel good. And where do you feel good? You feel good in BP at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, that's where you make your minor adjustments. You try different things. You know, you try to move the ball the other way. You try to pull the ball. You try to swing it just right, you know. And those are the times where I think that really pay off, that they're not getting available to them right now, which is just the case for all teams. But the fact is, I think it's really, really hurting some of these Red Sox hitters.
Andrew Benintendi had been drawing some walks. I think he had 7 walks in 4 games coming into the series, but he's not hitting. After Tuesday night, 2-for-29 with 12 strikeouts. And frankly, right now, Jerry, looks lost at the plate.
Yes.
What are you seeing with Benintendi, and what would you do? Would you give him – I mean, do you give him a night off so he has a couple days off? Do you move him down? Clearly, the leadoff thing hasn't worked. In his career, he does not have good numbers as a leadoff hitter. Do you keep sticking with that, or do you try something different?
Well, personally, I would take it with a swing a little bit if I was a hitting coach. And I'll tell you why. You know, he's one of those guys that relies on that leg kick, which I've never really liked. Because, you know, it has to be perfect. The timing has to be perfect. And if you notice, and I've mentioned this a number of times during games, and I'm wearing it out a little bit, but the fact is when it's all off-speed pitches. When he swings at him and misses, he's down on one knee, his back knee. I've never seen him do that before. So that tells me that his timing is way, way off, you know, and it's mostly on off-speed pitches that he does that. He very seldom does it on a fastball. So he's all geared up for the fastball, but what it tells you is he's not relaxed to handle a breaking ball. And what I would do with him, if I was, and I'm not a hitting coach, but if I was, I would say, look, just try this for a little while. Spread out, no stride, see the ball, hit the ball. You know, I mean, don't get caught up with the leg kick and the tapping and all this stuff that goes on in the game. Just focus in on the baseball. Don't worry about the lower half of your body and go out and get it, you know, because a lot of guys, they have so much going on at the bottom part of their hitting, you know, within their legs with the leg kicks and the toe taps and all that. All those things, in my opinion, that can do is hurt you, because I think they throw you all your timing off. And I think right now he's so messed up with, you know, with that, his mechanics, that it's messed with his head. He doesn't know what to do right now. I think he's totally lost. And we know he's much better than this. and we know this isn't going to last, but it's lasted a long time now. And if I was him, what I would do is just spread my stance out, take a very tiny stride, and just go after the ball and see what happens.
All right. And in the middle of all this, I mean, we're 11 games, 12 games in, and I don't want to talk about rebuilding just yet, but fans are looking at this. I mean, I heard the national broadcast the other day, Saturday, and they're saying, oh, this is going to be a 3 to 5 year rebuilding. I don't agree with that because there's too much talent on the offensive side. And I do think that if Erod, let's assume he is okay, and Brian O'Halloran, general manager, told me yesterday that they expect him to be fully healthy for all of next season. So yep. Now you got two guys with Eovaldi. Let's assume he gets Sale back. You won't have him in April, but let's assume by mid-season you've now got three. That's a whole different story now, because again, like Martin Perez, to me, is a perfectly fine number four or number five. He's not a number two. And now he's become a number two, and that's the problem. If you got to go into this offseason looking for a two and a three, well, okay, it's going to take you a long time. But if you're looking for a four and a five, Jerry, that's a whole different situation.
Oh, absolutely, without question. And I'm with you on this. This is not a total rebuild. This is, you know, this is going to take a little bit of work, obviously, to get it right. But it's not a total rebuild. You know, I was writing out the lineup last night before the game. You know, when I got it. And I said, you know, this is not a bad lineup. It's really not that bad. It just hasn't clicked, you know. And I say, I can go to work every day with this lineup, you know, and expect to be able to score some runs. When guys get in their groove, they're going to score runs. There's no question in my mind. But the fact is, with the pitching situation, you're right. If Sale can come back and be anywhere near what he was, if Erod can come back and pitch the way he did, obviously, or anywhere close to that, and then you got Eovaldi, which probably slides down in the number three spot. You're really only talking about picking up a couple of pitches, a couple of starting pitches for the back end. And you know, maybe one, maybe two. And so this is not a five-year project that we're on right now. And I heard the same thing, and I said, no, that's crazy talk. Because, you know, you've got to take into consideration what's happened to this team so far, what they do have in their pocket when guys get healthy. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It takes you back to when you were winning a lot of ball games. So, you know, there are tweaks they're going to have to make, and there's some signings they're going to have to make. But I don't think it's going to be a major overhaul of anything, regardless of what happened this year. They win five more games this year. I don't think it's going to be a major overhaul.
Brian Halloran was on the show, and one interesting name I think we're going to keep an eye on here is Darwinson Hernandez, right? He was coming back from the positive case. Guy was electric as a reliever, but he spent most of his minor league career as a starter. I asked O'Halloran about stretching him out and bringing him back in the rotation. Here's what he said.
Yeah, so as you know, Darwinson has, you know, he's got a background where he started in the past, and he certainly has the capability of giving us multiple innings. And so, he will he'll definitely get stretched out beyond one inning. How far that goes, we have not yet determined, but we're going to take it one step at a time.
So here's a young guy. They haven't developed a pitcher in a long time, Jerry, not a starting pitcher. They've had relievers, obviously, but it's been a while since they have drafted and developed a pitcher. They traded for Erod when he was in AA, and they developed him, obviously. Hernandez, Pedro Martinez 2 springs ago said, this guy's a major league starter. He's a middle of the rotation starter. He said, but if you want to get him to the majors quicker, make him a reliever, because then he can just throw 2 pitches and come in and use. He's got great velocity. Now the need for the team is starting pitching. So I think this could be a lot of fun. Probably a couple weeks, maybe, if they keep stretching him out in that AAA facility. But you talk about what are we watching for? Boy, a young pitcher who can throw hard and be a starting pitcher would be something to get excited about.
It could be exciting, yeah. I think the one thing that he has to learn, and learn very quickly, to be a starting pitcher is a third pitch. You know, he's basically a fastball, breaking ball pitch, a live fastball, good fastball, and a pretty good breaking ball too, but he really needs a changeup to go along with it, something he can battle those right-handed hitters with. And, maybe that's something he's working on right now to make him a complete pitcher. But it's very difficult to go into a season, you know, as a starting pitcher with only 2 pitches. Very few guys can do that. But he needs that third pitch, that changeup, I think, to really make him a complete pitcher. But he's got a great arm. You know, and he's a huge kid. He's a strong kid. And hopefully, maybe he is the type of guy that can come in. And we might see him before this is all done and see what he does in maybe a 4-inning stint or possibly a 5-inning stint once he gets filled up. you know, I would love to see it. I really would, because I think getting bullpen help is a little easier than getting starting pitching. And if you can develop one by yourself out of your minor league system, I think that's critical. And I think the only thing that's keeping him from being a starting pitcher is his off-speed pitch right now.
Yeah, you know, towards that end, if you look at his splits, what, even in the minors, when he's been really good the first time through the order. Yep. Now he starts to see guys a second time. They know to lay off the off-speed stuff, right? He's only got two pitches. You wait for the fastball, and you get on that. If he develops that third pitch, now you got something else to stick in their heads. I want to finish with this week, because it's at 3-8, right? It's not good. Does anything that happens this season matter? I'm trying to, you know what I mean? Like if you play 162 games and you're awful, right? You're the Orioles of the last 2 years. You're really demoralized. You know, part of me, I came on last night and said, listen, we're playing baseball in a pandemic, in a worldwide pandemic lockdown. I'm going to try to take a deep breath, enjoy these games, and just be happy that they are playing. And right. It doesn't mean they're playing for nothing. But I wonder ultimately how much you really can take away, whether they win 20 or 30 or 35 games this year.
You can't take away very much. You know, you really can't. And you know, we're accustomed to playing 162 games. It's a marathon. So many different things happen during the course of the season. The ups, the downs, the hot streaks, the cold streaks, the injuries. How you can survive those and, you know, wait for somebody to come back to be healthy. You can't do that this year. The whole thing's a total mess, in my opinion. I you know, I'm glad we're playing, too. Believe me, I'm glad I'm announcing games. I'm enjoying it. I would enjoy it much more if they're winning. But the fact is, the whole season is a mess. You've got games that have been canceled for a week. You know, you've got doubleheaders galore. You don't know day to day what team's going to be available to play. You don't know. And I think this whole thing is, to me, it's awful for me to say this, but it might have been better just bagging the whole thing, you know, because it's so silly. A lot of it to me is so silly. It doesn't make any sense. You know, that's not because the Red Sox are playing bad. That's right. All of baseball. The first thing I do, TC, when I get up in the morning is I look at MLB.com and I say, who's got coronavirus today?
Right.
I mean, what, you know, it's not like who's hot, who's not, who had a great game last night, who's sick today, you know.
This was amazing. We were on the air last night and we were talking about the Marlins, and I'm looking at MLB.com. And I couldn't figure it out for a moment because it said the Marlins were playing the Orioles. The game hadn't started yet because they were waiting for results. They had inconclusive results. So the game got held up 2 hours. But it said Marlins at Orioles. And then down at the bottom of the schedule, it said Marlins Phillies postponed. And I'm like, wait a minute. They've got the Marlins playing twice. But that's because they still had the original game on the schedule that had been postponed. And they had scheduled a different game. And just imagine, you're going to be a month from now, there's going to be 7 of those postponed games on the bottom of your screen. Listen, like you, I keep calling this a tournament. It's not a schedule. It's a tournament. They've got a 30-team tournament. It's like the NCAA tournament. You just play, and whatever happens, happens. And we got some baseball. We got some entertainment. But I'll tell you what, Bruins lost, Celtics lost, Red Sox lost. It didn't take long for us to all start getting pissed off again. So yeah. I guess that's the beauty of it, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you, we got a doubleheader in Destin today, right?
Yeah, we do. Big day. So this will be good. I'll let you go prep for it. Jerry, it's been fun, and I'll see you at the office.
All right, TC. Take care.
That's Jerry Remy, another edition of the TC and Jerry podcast. Thanks for watching, listening, downloading, whatever you do.